Morning's reading is from the Gospel of Matthew, chapter 4, verse 1 through 11. Entitled, The Temptation of Jesus. Then Jesus was led up by the Spirit into the wilderness to be tempted by the devil. He fasted 40 days and 40 nights, and afterward he was famished. The tempter came and said to him, If you are the Son of God, command these stones to become loaves of bread. But he answered, It is written, One does not live by bread alone, but by every word that comes from the mouth of God. Then the devil took him to the holy city, and placed him on the pinnacle of the temple, saying to him, If you are the Son of God, throw yourself down, for it is written, He will command His angels concerning you, and on their hands they will bear you up, so that you will not dash your foot against a stone. Jesus said to him, Again, it is written, Do not put the Lord your God to the test. Again, the devil took him to a very high mountain and showed him all the kingdoms of the world and their splendor. And he said to him, All these I will give you, and you will fall down, if you will fall down and worship me. Jesus said to him, Away with you, Satan. For it is written, Worship the Lord your God, and serve only him. Then the devil left him, and suddenly angels came and waited on him.
Thank you, Jim. Ah, temptations. Temptations. You know, I've heard a lot of people say, mostly people who are searching for a good excuse not to commit to any sort of Christian faith. I've heard him say, Oh, sure, Jesus can avoid temptation. He's the Son of God. He's perfect. Easy enough for him. Well, no. It's the exact opposite of the point of Jesus coming to us. It wasn't easy for him. It was hard for him. Think about it. Think about all he tackled, all he faced down, and all he went through for us to teach us. And this story of the temptations is a great place to start with that. For in truth, the good are tempted at least as much as the bad. In fact, I remember my first seminary. It was a Lutheran seminary in South Carolina where I started my training. And there was this wonderful, wonderful professor, Dr. Mary Havens. She was a marvel of a professor. Learned and passionate both. And she was very academic in our classes. It was a New Testament history class. And then she came into class one week and people were a little bit abuzz because two of our classmates, a man and a woman, had a sort of an ethical slip-up of gossipy material kind of stuff. And so we were rattled, a little shocked. Some of us were trying to reach out in love, and some of us were ripping into these people pretty good. And I had never seen her more fiery. And it's a lesson I will never forget, and I'm forever grateful to her for it. She stood up in front of the whole class. She closed her notes for the lecture of the day, and she said, I want to tell all of you something, all of you who are planning on climbing up into a pulpit. If you have the idea, she said in a very large voice, if you have the idea that the closer you get to the pulpit, the further you get from temptation, you've got it backwards. She said, the more you stand up and try to represent Christ, the more your mind is going to be toyed with, the more temptations will be laid before you, and the greater the opportunity to screw up in ways you don't even comprehend right now. And there was silence. sheer silence. Because we all went from kind of confident in our faith abilities and the fact that we were pretty learned individuals. Hey, we're studying Greek, we're studying Hebrew, and we're reading our Bibles every day and every night, to, oh my God, what are you getting me into? Which is the appropriate mindset for ministry. This idea that we're in way over our heads and we're going to need more power than we've got to accomplish things is the perfect outlook for ministry. And you are all ministers, just as I am. You are all representatives of Jesus Christ, just as I am. And so when we look at the temptation of Christ, rather than looking at this pretty cool story that would make a great movie, I mean, what? Just think of all the computer-generated effects as Jesus is shown by the devil how to turn a stone into bread, and they go flying up to the top of the temple, and then he takes him soaring out into space to see all of the people over all of the earth. That would be really great cinema, wouldn't it? If you added in a couple of explosions, hey, it'd probably be a blockbuster. But instead of looking at it that way, let's look at why it was included. It was included because temptation is part of our everyday life. And it's included right at the very start of Jesus' ministry. Because that is a good place for us to get our heads straight around the fact that this ain't easy, that this is hard. And so you have Jesus immediately going out into the wilderness after his public coming out party with his cousin John the Baptist. His ministry is beginning now. He's an adult. He's not some kid. He's not wet behind the ears. Well, yeah, he is wet behind the ears. He just got baptized. But he's not wet behind the ears that way. And he's out in the desert fasting. Now, when they say 40 days and 40 nights, a human body can't live 40 days and 40 nights without food. That is in the Hebrew idiom, a long time. And maybe it was 40 days and 40 nights. Who knows for sure? But he was out there a long time. And when he was weakest, hungriest, most shaken, most isolated and alone. Hungry, angry, lonely, tired. If you're any of those four things, or God help you, all four of those things, watch out. Your resistance is down. Your thinking is down. And that's when your head will get played with. And so it was that Jesus' head is played with. The first thing, just turn stones into bread if you're hungry. You know you can do it, right, Son of God? You know you can manipulate your environment and the people in it to get whatever you want to prosper. No one's watching. Just do it. Just do it. Yeah. Well, the temptation is there today with the power of this message, with the power of God in our life, to turn it into a get-rich scheme. I'm sorry, Joel Osteen. I'm really sorry, all you prosperity gospel preachers with your Rolex watches and your $1,000 suits, saying that God wants you to be rich. There is no sin in success. There is no sin in success. And God does want us to thrive. However, if we take the gospel message as a way to sell prayer towels and a way to line our own nests and a way to put new fancy tires on our new fancy Rolls Royce, well, that temptation is there because this is a powerful message that people are dying to hear. And they'll lap it up and they'll give you whatever they ask, whatever you ask. And so Jesus is speaking not just to that temptation there, but to us as we face it too. And he is in essence saying to us now, don't use all my hard work and all my suffering to line your own pockets. Don't use it to someone else's expense. The reason we're given the gospel message is to lift others up and help others along as we have been lifted up and helped along. So that's the first temptation. We're going through all the temptations. Then maybe we'll sing a temptation song. What do you think, Lord? Love the temptations. And I ain't too proud to beg. Okay, so second temptation. The devil takes him to the holy city and places him on the pinnacle of the temple, saying to him, "If you are the Son of God, throw yourself down, for it is written, he will command his angels concerning you, and on their hands they will bear you up." He's saying, make the big splash, Jesus. Get all the attention for you. Jump out there and show the whole world how fantastic you are. Now, this is included by Jesus for us, because in truth, that's what happens with us too. When you do what Jesus wants you to do, when you follow the will of God, people love you for it. They do. The people you help absolutely love you for it. And those who have nothing to do with a church or a faith community might even rave in their praise of you. As a pastor, I get that all the time. And it feels good. It feels good to have people think the very best of you. But that time right there, when you've just helped someone who knows nothing of your faith, when you've just done something that they're very grateful for, that is a time where you can either accept their accolades and bolster your image in their mind, or it's a time where you can tell them where you got the idea from. The words that you used, were they your words? Or did they come straight from his words? The actions that you undertook, was that totally under your own motivation? Or were you taught in your church what it meant to be a follower of God and Christ? That moment right there is your chance to point someone in God's direction, to say, well, thanks, but I was just doing what I've been taught to do in my church. I was just doing what Jesus did. I was just doing what God clearly tells us we have to do. Or, yeah, that thing that I said was really helpful. Well, here's the chapter and verse citation where you can find that. It's kind of like the old story of give a man a fish, he'll eat for a day, teach a man to fish, and his wife won't see him for weeks. No, teach a man to fish, and he'll eat forever. You can reach out in Christian love and help someone over and over again, or you can reach out in Christian love and then say, you know what? Come along with me and see the better way. So the temptation is there to make the big splash and take all the glory for yourself, when really what it is an opportunity to teach a more deep, profound, meaningful, and lasting lesson. Now, let's look at that third one. The devil took him to a very high mountain and showed him all the kingdoms of the world and their splendor. And he said to them, "All these I will give you if you will fall down and worship me." Jesus said to him, "Away with you, Satan, for it is written, worship the Lord your God and serve only him." Then the devil left him, and suddenly angels came and waited on him. And in other Gospels, it doesn't stop there, but it says the devil left him and waited for a more opportune time. I mean, it's not like you get this thing sussed and you're left free of temptation forever. Am I right? I'm not going to ask you to tell any stories, but am I right? Yeah. All that power. All that power that can be yours, because you have the power of knowing how to deal with people, knowing what to say to them, knowing how to become a hero in their eyes, knowing how to manipulate them, because you understand human nature from what you're taught by God and by your leaders, by your mentors, by your rabbis, by Jesus. It's powerful stuff. Man, you can walk into a room and have them eaten out of your hand. You can. You can. Some people who are ministers decide to run for president. Some people decide they're going to run their whole country. Some people run their whole country right in the ground through the misapplication of godly power to human power. as we learn to harness more and more power of the gospel, and there is deep power in the gospel, we can choose how we use that power. I mean, we can use our power to inspire people to build houses for those who don't have houses. We can use our power to rally people to take on a cause that otherwise wouldn't be done. We can use our power judiciously, I guess I'm saying, to make the world a better place. Or we can use our power just for ourselves, to gain more power and more power and more power. And there are examples of this all over the place, and no one is immune to them, even the greatest country on earth. When democracy started to break out all over the oil-rich areas of the world, we in the United States suddenly found ourselves on the wrong side because our strategic interests had seemingly been at odds for decades with our ethical stance and moral beliefs. You know, Saddam Hussein was our guy for a while. Mubarak was our guy for a while. And I hope, I don't get political, and I'm not being political here, I'm being Christian. I hope we've all awakened to the fact that in truth there is only one strategic interest, and that is to do the right thing. Because in the long run, all the material in the world, if it leads to the suffering of other people, is the wrong thing to have in your possession. And possession is 9/10 of the law. I don't want that on my hands. Do you want it on yours? Now, fortunately, we live in the greatest country in the world where we can wake up and say, whoa, 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 wait a second. And we can do what we've been doing, which is reverse course and say, okay, enough of that. We see democracy breaking out, and we're going to do what we can to support it. It's a good thing when we wake up and realize the power we have and how we need to use it. So, there we have the temptations, quite simply. And the closer you get to the pulpit, the closer you get to really, really having it down as a worthy servant of God, as a worthy follower of Christ, the closer you get to those things, as Dr. Mary Havens told me all those years ago, the rougher the temptations can be at times, and the more slippery and subtle they can be at times. So what do we do? Do we back away and say, oh, no, I'm not good enough for that. I'm not good enough to be a servant of Christ. I'm not going to identify myself as a Christian because I know I'm going to stumble and fall. I'm going to make a mistake. So I'm just going to stay here quietly and not do a thing. Well, if Jesus had done that, we wouldn't be where we are today, which is a good place to be. No. Our job, once we've committed to following on this path, is to stay on that path, is to gather in groups like this and have people in our lives to whom we are accountable. People in our lives, like for me, Mary Lou Miller is one. I have the imprint of her shoe right here. I could show you. People who keep you honest, who keep you accountable, who love you enough to be unpopular with you from time to time. People who will recognize the temptation you're struggling with and be right there to hold you on that path. People who will, when you've succumbed to temptation, say to you, you're still loved. God still loves you. Go forth and sin no more, is what Jesus said. No, the temptations are there, singing their hearts out. And our job is to help each other not let those temptations call the dance, but to stay on our path and do with the power that we've been given what God would have us do. Amen.